Well, it's great to be with you, and I'm looking forward to these days together. You know, a few years ago, I got thinking about what am I going to do with my life? What am I going to do with my time? And I decided a long time ago that I was going to use most of my time to try to help people live a better life and draw closer to the Lord in the process. That's one of the reasons why I'm here. That's one of the reasons why I ran into Mike Maroney. Now, Mike was a tough egg, I'll tell you. I mean, he was big, broad-shouldered, double-fisted. I'd sure hate to get in the way of his fists. You know, it's incredible how gentle a big, strong, mean, nasty man like that can become. And it was a remarkable thing to watch that happen. And now when people come to talk to me, I'm a professional counselor. I've never yet had anybody come and tell me they're fed up with this goodwill and friendship that's going on around the house. And everybody is cheerful and happy, and what they'd like to know from me is, how could they start a fight? Nobody has ever come to me with that kind of a problem. It's always the other way around. We are not getting along with one another. And what can you do to help us do that? And now many people come and say they have trouble with their children. Almost every time that happens, I've discovered, as I listen to their stories, that pretty soon it becomes obvious that this man and his wife disagree on what to do with that child. And so I have to set aside talking about the children. Now, that's why they came. I understand that. But I have to set that aside, and now I'm going to talk to them about themselves as a husband and a wife. And then I find out that these two people have personal issues that they have to deal with before they can function as a husband and a wife effectively. So we have to set aside the marriage and talk about the person. And so that's how I want to proceed here this week. And I'm going to talk a little bit about... Well, tomorrow morning I'm going to talk about mostly getting along with one another as a couple. And tomorrow night, I think I'd like to talk a little bit about developing children from little babies into adults. People seem to have a lot of need in those areas, so that's what I'll be doing tomorrow. Now, you know, say you want to be the best husband you can possibly be. I can remember saying that to my wife told me when she, my late wife told me when we were courting, that she was going to spend her whole life making me happy. That's what she said. You know, I believed her. And I told her that I was going to do the same thing for her. And I don't think I was lying. I think I meant it. You know, that whole thing blew up the first week we were married. You know, we came home from our honeymoon, and I went out that night. I told my wife, I'm going out to do something that I've done for years. I'm going to go see my men friends. And she said, you aren't going. Well, I mean, you might as well set her straight right now. And I went to see my men friends, and we had gone skiing on our honeymoon. And so I was telling them about the good time we had skiing, and so we did something we had done many, many times, nothing unusual at all. We planned a skiing trip for the next weekend, the boys and me. And so I went home to tell my wife the good news. This was her first chance to make me happy, just like she said. I'll tell you, that was not a very pleasant evening. You know, you can't necessarily do what you think you want to do. One time I was working on a book, and I got behind. And so for 30 days, all I did was eat and sleep and write. That's all. Usually I do some exercising, and I like to play tennis. I didn't play tennis for 30 days. At the end of 30 days, I took my racket, good racket, my shoes, Adidas shoes, and head shorts. I mean, I had all the equipment, and I had good intentions, and I meant to put that ball where I wanted to put that ball, and I meant to hit it straight and hard and true. You know what I discovered? That I couldn't do it. My timing was off. So I tell myself, my timing is off. But you don't just correct timing just because you tell yourself you're going to correct your timing. In about 15 minutes, I began huffing and puffing, and my muscles began to ache. And you know what I found out? If you want to get out of condition, physically speaking, you don't need to do a thing. Now, it would have been nice if I could have said to my wife, I want you to exercise for me for 30 minutes a day for a month so I don't lose my conditioning. Can't do that. The only thing that happened would be that she would get into condition, but she could not do that for me. You know, if you don't eat, you're going to go hungry. If you don't sleep, you're going to be sleepy. And if you don't look after your spiritual condition, you're going to grow cold. And you don't need to do anything about it. Just don't do anything about it, and you'll grow cold. And you'll have a cold heart long before anybody else is affected by your cold heart. Now, the point I'm trying to make is that there are some things that you have to do for yourself, and if you don't do them, you cannot perform the way you want to perform, no matter how much you want to do it. You're not going to be able to do it. I remember I had a boss, I used to be an engineer a long time ago. And these were the early days in my Christian life. And this boss, well, he was a mean guy. And he had started out in a shop where they chew tobacco. And so now he's the chief engineer, and he's got this glass office, and he can look out at us. And he had he brought with him a highly polished brass spittoon to this office. And he had a big rubber mat cut about that round. And that was on a rug, and this spittoon was sitting in the middle of the rug. And we would see him open. You ever watch a guy get ready to chew tobacco? It's a kind of a ritual. He opens his pouch and works the tobacco and shoves it in his jaw, or something like this. And then while he's chewing that, he's looking at it some more, and he gets another three fingers and puts it in there. And when he's doing that, all us fellows in the engineering department, we knew somebody was going to get it. And then he'd go in the general direction of that spittoon. He seldom hit it. That's why he had the rubber mat. And I would hear, bam! That's all it took is one word. I'm getting along fine. Perfectly happy. It only took one word, and instantly, I was mad from head to foot. You ever had that happen to you? One word, that's all it took. Now, when you're mad at your boss, so how do you approach him? If I told him what I thought, I would have solved my problem. I wouldn't, you understand, I wouldn't be there. I can do that. And so I learned to look like this. You know, folks, this is what mean, nasty people look like. And I would go into that office. You know, he didn't know that I was contemplating his teeth. I would be polite. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Now, listen, all of us can act like that, can't we? You know, folks, the Christian life is not a matter of perfecting your acting ability. That's not the Christian life. But isn't it a frustrating thing when we consider that the Christian life is a matter of controlling your anger, say, and so we swallow our anger, and we call that Christianity. all that is deceiving people. Isn't it? The Christian life is not a matter of perfecting your acting ability. And so I became all tightened up. And then I'd lash out at my wife. And I would lash out at some of my friends. Or my little boy. My little tiny 3-year-old boy. That little boy would look up at me and he'd say, "No!" And that little boy would make me mad instantly. Little tiny 3-year-old boy. So there I'm going around angry. And I was just a victim of other people's choices. And so I started searching the scriptures for an answer. And I came up with a Bible verse. I'd like to share this with you because other people have told me that they've struggled with this verse too. Now, I don't know what you think of Bible verses, but when I studied this one, I didn't like it at all. This Bible verse made me mad. It's in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 31. This is what it says. "Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you." Now, all those things apply to me. Anger, wrath, bitterness, clamor, evil speaking. Our favorite subject around the lunch table was how we hated that man. And we would spend our lunch time griping about the boss. And the next verse was worse yet. I couldn't buy that one at all. "Be kind to one another." You know, I talk to people. They'll come in and they tell me about, a lady, "Tell me about your husband." And she's ready. I mean, she'd spew out stuff about him. And I would say, "You don't have to be upset over that." And she would say, "What?" Isn't it amazing what other people can do to you? And to talk to that lady about being nice to her husband, why should I be nice to him? He doesn't deserve it. That's the way I felt about my boss. That's the way I felt about my wife. And I even tried to justify acting that way around my little boy. "Be kind one to another and tender-hearted and forgiving one another." That sounds like a sissy, doesn't it? But, you know, one day I decided that the Bible was right and I was going to cut it out. I wasn't going to act like that anymore. Now, I don't know about you, but when I make up my mind to do something, I usually carry it out, don't you? And so I decided that I was going to quit being mad at him. And I went to work and I see him loading his jaw. "What's somebody going to get?" And he says, "Bam!" And it was me. And you know what? I was as mad as ever. I found out that I couldn't make up my mind to stop being mad at him. And so I had this problem with Christianity. Here, this was telling me to do something that in the first place I don't want to do, and once I decide I'm going to do it, this book is telling me to do something that I can't do. And that's exactly the thing that the book wants to make us understand, isn't it? That we are sinful people and out of control. And many times what controls us is somebody else's choices. And you can be instantly furious. I think that's where a lot of your child abuse comes from. I don't think mothers try to figure out how to beat their kids. I think many a mother and many a father has already hit the kid before he even realized that he did it because they're out of control. Well, anyway, I kept searching the scriptures and I found a passage of scripture that changed my life and changed my profession. Let me read it to you. It's in Second Corinthians chapter 3, 4th and 5th verse. "Such trust have we through Christ toward God. Not that we are sufficient of ourselves to think of anything as being from ourselves. Now, when I read that, I didn't like that either. That's not true. Let me read it. Not that we are sufficient of ourselves to think of anything as being from ourselves. This is saying you haven't got it. And I say that's not true. I do. There are some things I can do for myself. I got an education all by myself. I didn't have to look to God for an education. I mean, universities are loaded with people getting good educations. They don't need God's help for an education. I got a job without His help. I got some promotions without His help. I could obey the etiquette book without His help. Listen, there are indeed some things that you can do without God's help. And I kept reading. Who also has made us ministers of the new covenant, not of the letter, but of the Spirit. Because the letter will kill, but the Spirit gives life. Did you get that? You can live up to the letter of the law. I can bottle up my anger and not do what I'd like to do. At least part of the time I can do that. But what I can't do is live up to the spirit of the law. Now to treat you in a kindly fashion I can do. But to have a kind spirit behind my kind deed is not possible without God's help. I think we have to make the distinction between acting and being. And I got that through my head finally. But one thing I could not do was to manage my soul in the presence of my boss when he yelled at me. And so I realized this is the issue. Now, this is tough. Because I don't even want to like that guy when he's yelling at me. If I knew where to go to find love toward that dirty dog, I wouldn't even want that. Listen, this is something that we all have to face many times. You don't even want to be loving under certain conditions. But this is something I struggled with for quite a while. Wanting to love him when he's hollering at me. And wanting to be compassionate toward my wife when she won't do what I ask. That's the issue. You know, I finally got to the point where I realized that I'm actually helpless. I may be smart. I may have some training. I may have some education. I may have some resources. But I am not able to manage my spirit when my boss hollers at me. You know, we all have discovered that when we got married, didn't we? It's the things that our partners do to us, just like that. The only people who think that marriage makes lovers out of you are single people. Isn't it true? Marriage will bring you up to date on what you're like in your heart, won't it? And if marriage doesn't do it, parenthood will. And so if you pay attention, at least that was true with me, that I realized that I simply can't manage my soul. And finally I asked the Lord to give me a love for that man while he was yelling at me. You know, I can still remember going to work one day and there he is. Well, in his jar, he goes, bam! And you know what? I wasn't mad at him. You know, I enjoyed that old crab. I got a kick out of him. Really. You know, one of the engineers that I worked with approached me one day and he said, Brent, you seem to be happy lately, are you? You know, I didn't know that there was anything any different. I didn't say anything to anybody. That's what he said. That's how an engineer thinks. He's not going to take anything for granted. You seem to be happy lately, are you? Look at two engineers riding in a train and one says, look at those sheep out there, have all been sheared. The other engineer says, well, at least they've been sheared on this side. You got to be careful. Well, he said, you aren't entering into the grudge sessions anymore. It was true. He said, can you help me? I didn't know hardly what happened to me, much less helping him. But anyway, that's what I did. I said, well, I do some research, and I'll tell you what, I've only been doing this for a couple of weeks. I don't know how long it's going to last. It's been working for a couple of weeks. So I went to study my Bible, and I discovered that if I were going to help him, I had to point out to him that he was a sinner and he needed a Savior. I didn't want to do that. Well, anyway, I worked out something, and finally he kept after me, and I invited him over one night, very reluctantly. I really didn't want to do this. So I started out in the Garden of Eden with him. And I got into some of the problems the kings had, and the prophets, and I threw in a few proverbs. But you know, I'm getting closer and closer to the New Testament. And really, I felt so uncomfortable telling him that Jesus died for his sins. And I even put it this way, you wouldn't want to accept him, would you? You know what he said? He said, listen, I was ready an hour ago. That was my first convert. And you know, that changed his life, changed his marriage. This was an amazing, unbelievable thing to me, that people could change like that. And I want to call your attention to a few scripture verses, statements that Jesus made. And I believe that, boy, time flies, doesn't it? Let me just read you a few verses. John 14:27. This is Jesus speaking. What difference does that make anyway, what Jesus says? Well, anyway, this is what he says. Peace I leave with you. My peace I give unto you. Not as the world gives do I give unto you. He's saying there's two kinds of peace. This is Jesus who created the world. He says there's two kinds of peace. My kind and the world's kind. And I don't want you to turn to my world that I made for peace. I want you to turn to me. He says, I mean for you to be peaceful people. That means relaxed and at ease and comfortable. I mean for you to be peaceful people on this earth. And further, he says, let not your heart be troubled. And neither let it be afraid. The picture he's painting here is that his intention for you and for me is to allow him to make you a peaceful, relaxed, comfortable, untroubled, unafraid person in this world. And I'm amazed as I travel around what low level of Christian living many people are willing to accept. People are always telling me how troubled they are. We even get together and form groups to share how miserable we are with each other. We don't mind being miserable. In fact, sometimes if people don't notice that we're miserable, you will let them know that you are miserable. Can't you see I'm unhappy? Isn't that right? We actually want people to know that we are unhappy. Some of us say to our children, look, if the way you behave, you make me unhappy. And I'm unhappy because of you. That's what we say to our children sometimes, isn't it? Look at me. I'm miserable because of you. Well, that's really confusing sex confusing Christian education. You are the cause of me not walking in the Spirit. But we are that way anyway, are we not? Now what difference does it make that Jesus said that we ought to be peaceful, relaxed, in a troubled world, untroubled in a troubled world, and unafraid? That's what Jesus said He means for you and for me. In this world. Today. Well, you know, when I think about Jesus interacting with us, I was reading this one time. I was reading in John chapter 1, verse 10. It says about Jesus, He was in the world, and the world was made through Him, and the world did not know Him. Isn't that amazing? He was in the world was made through Him, and the world did not know Him, and He came unto His own, and His own did not receive Him. Imagine that. And I got to thinking about the interaction that I observed sometimes when our children were home. Our children are grown up and gone now, but when they were home, and they were teenagers, they would approach my wife and me. They'd say, for instance, can we go to that party on Friday night? And so my wife and I would get together and talk it over. Now she was the world's greatest expert on the subject of our three children. Nobody in the world cared as much about those three children as her, or knew as much, or invested as much time in those three children as that lady. But I claim to run a close second to that, and besides, I'm a professional child psychologist. Now, you'd think the kids would be thrilled at such a high-level meeting for them. Hey, that's security, isn't it? Imagine the two people in the whole wide world who care the most about me are bringing their finest judgment to bear for my benefit. What a wonderful situation that is. And so we would give them the benefit of our judgment. No. You can't go. Now, of course, they're psychologist kids. And so they would say, well, Father, when we think of your qualifications and your commitment and your dedication to us, and we know you want our best for us, we'll be delighted to stay home. Do you believe that? They would say, what? Can you imagine talking to a professional child psychologist like that? You can't do that to us. I mean, we've just got to go. Everybody we know is going. We've got to go. Can we go? That's how they would approach us. This is after our finest judgment on their behalf. We would say no. But Dad, you're going to make a freak out of us. How are we going to explain this to our friends? Can we go? We would say no. So then they would back off. Regroup. And they'd come back at us. And they'd say something like, you know, Dad, we've been suspecting for quite a while that you don't love us. That's the trouble around here. There's no love around here. If you loved us, Father, you would let us go. Can we go? And we would say no. So they take another angle. I mean, people are determined, aren't they? You know what it says about people? All of us, like sheep, this is Isaiah 53:6. All of us, like sheep, have gone astray, and we have gone every one unto his own way. That's what people are like. The sweetest music to anybody's ears is, let's do it my way. Obviously, that's the way to do it. And if you have to decide between having things your own way, for example, and having a rocky marriage, you're going to have things your own way and let the marriage rock. That's the way we are. So they'd come to us and they'd say, "You call yourself a Christian. Well, if you're a Christian, deliver me from Christianity." When we get old enough to make up our own minds, we'll never darken a church door again. It'll be your fault. Can we go? You know, folks, there were times when our children were convinced that my wife and me were their worst enemies. There were times when our children demanded the right to be wrong. "This is my life. I can do what I want with my life, can't I?" There were times when my children demanded the right to go to the wrong place at the wrong time with the wrong crowd. "And this is my right." That's the way our kids responded sometimes to the finest judgments that we could come up with. Now, they didn't mind us feeding them. They didn't mind us housing them or clothing them or giving them transportation or giving them medical attention or giving them dental attention. They didn't mind benefiting from being a member of the family. They just didn't want to be involved with the people who ran the family. "We'll take all the benefits of being in this family." But, you know, we often hear people say, "Teenagers need attention. And so you pay attention to teenagers. Where are you going?" That's attention. Listen, they don't want attention. What do they want? They want what everybody else wants. They want to do what they're going to do, and they're going to do whatever they have to do to get out. That's the only thing they're concerned about. So how can I accomplish what I want to accomplish? That's the only question that a lot of people have, isn't it? That's normal. That's human nature. That's why we need a Savior to correct that drive within us to have our own. Many of us have the same approach to God. We are in His world, and we don't mind being in the world, do we? We don't mind benefiting from being in this world. And when some of us who've traveled overseas, we come back to this country and we realize what a wonderful, magnificent country this is, and the benefits that we have. You would think that the people in the United States would be the happiest people in the world with all the benefits they have. For instance, I never, just landing in this country and driving away from the airport and feel those smooth roads. Oh, the wonderful things. But you know, we just take those things for granted. That's our right, isn't it? Isn't it our right to have all these things? I remember one time I just, out of the goodness of my heart, gave a fellow that worked for me a raise, just out of the goodness of my heart. And his reaction was, "Well, it's about time." He didn't appreciate that raise. It's his right. And so that's the way we approach the world sometimes. We have every right to benefit from this world. But listen, don't ask me to get involved with the creator of this world. I don't mind enjoying the creation, but I don't want to get involved with the creator. And so he came unto his own, and his own received him not. Have you ever come home And your wife received you not? It happens, doesn't it? Well, you know, folks, that's the thing I want to call your attention tonight. Just to whet your appetite a little bit. We work so hard to acquire the things of this world. But what we bypass often is what Jesus really wants to give you. And that is peace in your heart. You know, a lot of us, if we can't have our own way, the last thing we want is peace. People say, if I were peaceful, I'd never get what I want. If I'm going to get what I want, I've got to let people know that I'm miserable. I have parents that, what can I do to make my children happy? You know, folks, there's nothing you can do to make your children happy. You get the idea that you buy them something that will make them happy. You give them their own way and that will make them happy. Do you realize that joy is a fruit of the Spirit? Only God will put joy in their hearts. That's true of you too. But some of us say, no, what I need is an addition onto the house. So some of you, you've got your addition, haven't you? What do? You move yourself into the addition, just... And there you were. You know, one time I was introduced, I was at a banquet of businessmen, and this prominent lawyer was introducing me. And I said, how come you're introducing me? He said, well, I'll tell you how I got here. I was a football star in high school. I loved it. When I got my diploma, I thought to myself, holding that diploma, there must be something more to life than this. Then I was a football star in college, and I went to Yale University. And I benefited from the cheer of the crowd in a big stadium at Yale University. Then I got my diploma, and I said to myself, there's got to be more to life than that. Then I went to Harvard Law School. When I got my diploma, I said to myself, there's got to be more to life than that. But the thing that finally got us, my wife and me, we got to build our dream house. I'm talking about a $1 million house. And they went into that beautiful house and said to themselves, is that all there is? But you know, I live in West Palm Beach. And Palm Beach is some of the most expensive real estate there is. And there's some very affluent people that live in Palm Beach. And one of these couples came to see me at our condominium. And they drove up in two cars. A Mercedes-Benz convertible and a Cadillac. Well, the reason they came in two cars is because one car, they couldn't stand each other in one car. Now, I tell you, that's one of the benefits of wealth, if you can afford two cars. Now, they lived in a professionally decorated, color-coordinated home. You never saw a prettier place to be miserable in. Now, I tell you, if I'm going to be miserable, I'd rather be miserable in a place like that. In a little old house. At least you can choose the surroundings for your misery. Now listen, they did not come to tell me that they owned all those things. What did they come to tell me? They came to tell me that they were puzzled. What do you have to do to get along? We've run out of things to buy. We've run out of places to go. What can we do? That's the real question, isn't it? And so we may ask ourselves, what in the world can I do to be more comfortable? What in the world can I buy that will make me more comfortable? And you can do a lot. For instance, in this world, you can lose yourself in a book. You can lose yourself in music. You can lose yourself in pouring your heart out to a counselor. And I'm one of those. And I tell you, you come and spend an hour with me, and you cooperate with me, and I'll help you go away feeling a lot better than you did when you came. Just you and me. We don't have to talk about God at all. You can lose yourself in your work. You can throw yourself into your yard and do your yard work. You can swallow things. You know, I used to, in my teen years, I was a heavy drinking kid and angry at the world. But you know, I discovered that if I took a couple of good drinks, I started liking people. Wonderful, just a couple of drinks. And I changed from being an angry guy to being a nice guy. A couple of minutes ago, I would have pasted you in the teeth, and now I'm glad to be around you. A couple more drinks, and I got to even thinking, are you like me? You know, one of the things that people do in our world to try to find contentment and peace is to turn to alcohol. That's one of the fastest ways that I know of for you to calm down. But listen, folks, it's also the royal road to destruction. It's our biggest social problem that we've got is alcohol. Drugs? Listen, if you're uneasy, all you gotta do is swallow a pill. If you're down, ever been down? Have you ever awakened and said to yourself, oh no, I woke up? All you gotta do is take an upper. And you'll feel a lot better. Just simple chemistry. Listen, what in the world can you do? There's a lot of things you can do in this world to find some relief. Jesus said, I don't want you to look into my world for peace. I want to give you peace. And I want to give you an untroubled heart. And I want to strengthen you so you can go through this world unafraid. That's what I mean for you. When we think of the fruit of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, gentleness, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, self-control, God means for us to be jolly, happy, easygoing, decent people who care about one another. That's what the essence of Christianity. If the strength to do that comes from Him. Now you have an opportunity. You can think about this a little bit tonight, I hope. Now you come back tomorrow. See, tonight I've been talking pretty much about you. Now I want to really talk about getting along with one another, but we can't talk about getting along with one another unless you have the strength to do it. And so if you want to get along with one another, you've got to pay attention to yourself and get ready and prepare to do that. And so that's some of the things that I hope we can accomplish. We're getting a little clearer picture than we have now. Well, what in the world? That's what we've been asking ourselves. What in the world can we do? We're going to ask ourselves, what can God do for us that will enable me to be the kind of a person I ought to be? And then my boss can yell, "Brant!" all he wants to. I was talking to a lady last week who was really mad at somebody that was 2,000 miles away. She'd worked herself into a frenzy over somebody that's 2,000 miles away. I said, "That's dumb. There isn't even anybody here. And you work here, the fellow 2,000 miles away doesn't even know you're around." Imagine punishing herself like that. But we do that, don't we? Well, there's a fact is that nobody can stop you from turning to God for help. On the other hand, nobody can make you either. This is one time when you're truly independent. Well, I'm through. It's been a delight to talk with you. This is just a start. I deliberately didn't finish anything. I just tried to start something. And we'll continue that tomorrow. Now, the books over there, if you'd like to look at those, I'd sure appreciate it if you'd buy some.